Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Here we go, entering into the fourth and final hour, the Monday, Can't Trust That Day edition of the Bobby Mac Show, the one we refer to as the bonus hour, and isn't the preceding three, you know what we do. Let's do that. Grab the phone, use the Ingalls Advantage talk line, 800-347-1063. Common Sense Retirement Planning text line number, 71307, and my email address, Bob at 1063WORD.com. Great to have you along. Some interesting news this afternoon. I got a text message referring to this right before the newscast at the top of the hour. President Trump today ordering the declassification of several key documents related to the FBI's probe of Russian actions during the 2016 presidential election, including 21 pages of an application for a renewed surveillance warrant against former campaign aide Carter Page, as well as text messages from disgraced FBI figures Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said the president had ordered the documents released at the request of a number of committees of Congress and for reasons of transparency. You know, of course, that Mark Meadows, congressman from North Carolina with the Freedom Caucus, has been asking the president to do this for some time. The documents to be declassified also include 12 FBI reports on interviews with Justice Department official Bruce Orr. You remember, he's at the center of this as well. He was the number four guy at the FBI, DOJ rather, at the time. And his wife was an employee of Focus GPS, the group that actually was behind this Trump dossier put together by the former British spy Michael Steele, as well as all FBI reports of interviews prepared in connection with all other applications to surveil Carter Page. Those would be what are referred to within the Bureau as 301 documents. That's a report from an investigator, from a FBI agent, as the ongoing investigation continued. Trump also ordered the DOJ to release text messages for a number of the key players in the Russia investigation without redaction. In other words, in the clear, where names are named, that would include Bruce Orr, Strzok, also includes Lisa Page, former FBI Director James Comey, and former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. It was not immediately clear when or how the documents would be released. Congressional sources tell Fox News that House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes, Republican of California, does not know how soon he will get the documents, but said Trump's order covers pretty much everything that he was seeking, and the text messages are a bonus. You remember earlier this month, 12 Republican members of Congress publicly asked the president to declassify the June of 2017 application for a warrant to surveil Page, as well as the FBI reports of interviews with Orr, known as in bureaucratic parlance as Form 302s. I think I misspoke and said 301s. They're actually 302s. On Sunday, Nunez told Fox Business Network that witness interview transcripts and other documents from that committee's now concluded Russia investigation should also be made public before November's midterm elections. If the president wants the American people to really understand just how broad and invasive this investigation has been to many Americans and how unfair it has been, he has no choice but to declassify. Nunez said on Fox Business News Sunday Morning Futures. House Oversight Committee Chairman Trey Gowdy said last week that it would be beneficial for Americans to see those documents. And it certainly would, because we know that, or we believe that the FBI was extremely disingenuous, as well as the DOJ, in how they went about applying for these warrants to be able to conduct surveillance on Carter Page and, by connection, the Trump campaign. For instance, case in point, they failed to tell the FISA court judge that this Steele dossier had actually been funded, the money had been paid to Michael Steele and to Fusion GPS by the DNC and by the Hillary Clinton campaign. Which might certainly have had some influence on their decision-making process in whether or not to grant the warrant to spy on the campaign of a political opponent, when the evidence the FBI and DOJ were using to seek the warrant in the first place had been paid for by the Clinton campaign. Additionally, the FBI also, I don't want to say outright lied, but they lied by omission rather than commission, when they also failed to tell the FISA court judge that the evidence they were using in seeking the warrant, which was a couple of news stories, came from leaks within the FBI. Leaks that were discussed in the text messages that were unveiled last week from Mr. Page, from Mr. Strzok and Lisa Page, where they talked about the FBI's concerted effort to leak stories to the news media. So the FBI leaked the stories to the media. Then the FBI turned around and used those very same news stories as evidence to convince the FISA court judge that it wasn't just the Steele dossier that they were using as their rationale or as their basis to seek the surveillance warrant against Carter Page and the Trump campaign, when in point of fact, it was all one and the same. Maybe we finally will begin to get to the bottom of this convoluted, obvious attempt, number one, to derail the Trump campaign before the election, and failing that, then trying to make it as difficult as possible for the Trump campaign to be able to actually execute their agenda. Bob, did you hear they're thinking of putting up dog on Woodruff Road during construction? I'm not sure what that's supposed to mean. That may be one of those voice-to-text messages that didn't quite translate into English. Bobby, love the sound effects with Lisa Page. So funny. Yeah, it's like Frau Blücher from Young Frankenstein. Quarter after six here on the Bobby Mac Show as we cruise along. When we come back on the other side, I will share with you, because you may not have availed yourself of it, the text of the letter that Christine Ford sent to Senator Dianne Feinstein that is behind the accusation of sexual misconduct against Judge Brett Kavanaugh. We'll read you what she wrote to the senator. That's next here on the Bobby Mac Show on Monday. Lub-dub, lub-dub, lub-dub. Heart of Rock and Roll still beating.
Bob McClain!
621 here in the Bobby Mac Show. In on the text line, 71307. Bobby, the brother of Kavanaugh's accuser, worked for a law firm that retained Fusion GPS. Jeez, I am certainly surprised and stunned to hear that. Not. Bob, the reason Feinstein did not have Ford at the hearings is because it took Hillary Clinton's computer cleaners until last week to scrub Ford's social media accounts. From Richard. Yeah, funny how they just magically vanished. They disappeared off the internet. Bobby, whenever I see former Secretary of State John Kerry, I think, hey, John, why the long face? Yeah. Ay, ay, ay. So here is the letter, the text of the letter that Christine Blasey Ford wrote to Senator Dianne Feinstein detailing an event in which she accuses the Supreme Court nominee of sexual misconduct. This is from the Collusion News Network, CNN. They point out CNN was not provided a copy of the letter, but a source who had the letter read the contents of a redacted version to CNN. Letter dated 30 July 2018. Senator Dianne Feinstein, dear Senator Feinstein, I am writing with information relevant in evaluating the current nominee to the Supreme Court. As a constituent and a loyal Democrat, no, I better not add my own line. I'll just read it straight. As a constituent, I expect that you will maintain this as confidential until we have further opportunity to speak. Brett Kavanaugh physically and sexually assaulted me during high school in the early 1980s. He conducted these acts with the assistance of, and the name is redacted, but it's, I believe, Mike Judge. That name has since come out. Both were 1 or 2 years older than me and students at a local private school. She was a student at a private school herself, by the way. The assault occurred in a suburban Maryland area home at a gathering that included me and 4 others. Kavanaugh physically pushed me into a bedroom as I was headed for a bathroom up a short stairwell from the living room. They locked the door and played loud music, precluding any successful attempt to yell for help. Kavanaugh was on top of me while laughing with Judge, who periodically jumped onto Kavanaugh. They both laughed as Kavanaugh tried to disrobe me in their highly inebriated state. With Kavanaugh's hand over my mouth, I feared he may inadvertently kill me. From across the room, a very drunken judge, this is the friend, said mixed words to Kavanaugh, ranging from go for it to stop. At a point, when Judge jumped onto the bed, the weight on me was substantial, the pile toppled, and the two scrapped with each other. After a few attempts to get away, I was able to take this opportune moment to get up and run across to a hallway bathroom. Wait a minute, I thought you said the door was locked. I locked the bathroom door behind me. Both loudly stumbled down the stairwell, at which point other persons in the house were talking with them. I exited the bathroom, ran outside of the house, and went home. I have not knowingly seen Kavanaugh since the assault. I did see Judge once at a meeting where he was extremely uncomfortable seeing me. I received medical treatment regarding the assault. On July 6th, I notified my local government representative to ask them how to proceed with sharing this information. It is upsetting to discuss sexual assault and its repercussions, yet I felt guilty and felt an obligation, blah, 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 to bring it forward. Now then. For the judge's part, he is denying that he was at the high school party in question where Ford said he attempted to rape her as a friend watched. Kavanaugh spoke with Republican Senator Orrin Hatch. He is one of the members of the Senate Judiciary Committee for about 10 minutes this afternoon. Kavanaugh denied to him that he was the individual in question. Hatch said Kavanaugh told the senator that Dr. Ford, who acknowledged to the Washington Post that she did not remember some key details of the incident, may be mistaking him for someone else. Republican Susan Collins warned, obviously, if Judge Kavanaugh has lied about what happened, that would be disqualifying. Kavanaugh stands ready to testify tomorrow if the Senate is ready to hear him, said White House spokesman Raj Shah in a statement. The president also defended his Supreme Court nominee, saying he's never, ever even had a blemish on his record, and he believes it will work out very well. The president also indicated he would be fine with a delay in the confirmation and wants the complete process. If it takes a little delay, it'll take a little delay, he said. Judge Kavanaugh said in a new statement he's willing to talk to the Senate Judiciary Committee again and has again denied the allegation against him. He added, I had no idea who was making this accusation until she identified herself yesterday, as she did in a story in the Washington Post. He was spotted arriving at the White House this morning. It's been reported he has hired an attorney and is calling key senators. Christine Ford's attorney had said earlier in the day that Ford is willing to testify in public before the Senate Judiciary Committee. She is willing to do whatever it takes to get her story out, Deborah Katz told the Today Show. By the way, the Washington Post reported this afternoon that the professor, and this is the third college I've seen her associated with. This, the story from townhall.com, well, actually the Washington Post, says that she's a professor at Stanford, is behind the confidential letter sent to Feinstein. We also have found out that the legal advisor for Kavanaugh's accuser is a big-time Democrat donor who thinks that people who work for Donald Trump are miscreants. And let's see what else is in this story. It references what happened with Bill Clinton in the bimbo eruptions that he experienced. Katz argued during the bimbo eruptions that the Paula Jones allegation could not hold up in court. So obviously she was defending Democrats who faced the same kind of accusations in the case of Bill Clinton. Katz continued to dismiss certain episodes of sexual misconduct throughout the years. Fast forward to 2017, Katz defended then-Senator Al Franken of Minnesota after a photo appeared of him mock-groping a female colleague. At the time, Katz said, context is relevant. He did not do this as a member of the U.S. Senate. He did this in his capacity of someone who was still functioning as an entertainer and dismissed charges that it was sexual harassment. Since 2004, Katz, who is the attorney for the woman bringing these charges, has donated at least $26,000 to Democrat politicians, including Hillary, Obama, and John Kerry. She has also donated to groups such as MoveOn.org, that's Soros' outfit, the DNC Service Corps, and the Democrat Senatorial Campaign Committee, declared via Facebook, these people are all miscreants. The term basket of deplorables is far too generous a description for these people who are now senior Trump advisors. Okay. But, of course, their political ideology had no influence on their decision for Professor Ford to come forward with this charge. Right? Right? 6:30 here on the Bobby Mack Show. Right back with the last half of the bonus hour here on Monday. Not me, thank you. I'm perfectly content with my little corner. Feel no burning desire to rule the world. 6:36, 24 before 7. Besides, that's the job of the progressives on the left anyway, because they are our elitist betters. And we're too stupid out here in the great unwashed masses and flyover country to know what's really good for us. We must depend on our progressive betters to explain it to us, right? Bobby, when I hear miscreants, I can't help but think amateurs, unlike us real criminals. Yeah. Yeah, how true. Let's see. What else do I need to catch up with from the text line here? I think I have caught up with the text line. That's good. That's good, because that means that gives me time to bring on today's edition of...
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, Bob McLean presents Amazing, Amazing, True, True Facts.
Here they are. They're amazing. They're all true. And they are factual. The Monday edition. This year's National Toy Hall of Fame finalists have been announced. 12 finalists. 3 of the 12 will be inducted later this fall. 2 of them also were nominated last year but didn't make it in. Uno cards and the Magic 8 Ball. Magic 8 Ball is not the National Toy Hall of Fame. Say it's not true. Pretty strong field this year. Might be tough for them again. Here are the 12 nominees. American Girl dolls. Chalk. Just plain old simple chalk. Chutes and Ladders. The Magic 8 Ball. Masters of the Universe action figures. Pinball. The Sled. Tic-Tac-Toe. Tickle Me Elmo. Electric Football. Uno. And the Fisher-Price Corn Popper. A little dome thing that kids push around like a stroller and has little balls inside that pop around when the wheels turn. The 3 toys that make it in will be announced on the 8th of November. Mark your calendars. Last year inductees were Clue, the Wiffle Ball, and the Paper Airplane. Okay, there you go. Christmas is right around the corner. Be here before you know it. Seen Christmas stuff in the stores yet, Moneypenny?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Give it a rest, all right. It's not even Halloween. If you have a great family tradition, like in Christmas vacation, of piling in the car every winter to go pick out a Christmas tree, well, scrap it, because your overlords at Amazon are now taking over that world as well. You wanted to add something, Moneypenny?
Yeah, you were asking me about Christmas stuff.
Yeah.
So it's you walk through the store and you feel very schizophrenic because you have your fall stuff, then you have your Halloween stuff, then you have your Christmas stuff.
You're too far off mic. There you go.
You have your fall stuff, you have your Halloween stuff, and then you have your Christmas stuff.
Right.
All in succession aisles.
That's
so
right.
You don't know what year, what month, what date it is.
Should I buy for Halloween?
Right.
Because that's the most pressing one. Maybe I should buy for Thanksgiving. Well, I have to kill that turkey before you know it.
It's like you walk down these aisles and it's like schizophrenic, you know, multiple. Am I this? Am I that? Should I get the pumpkin or should I get the skeleton? Wait, there's shiny glowing balls. I mean, it's just you walk through one store and it's just everything at once.
Decisions.
No.
Well,
too much for me.
I should remind you of my motto. I'm schizophrenic, and so am I. Amazon just announced they're going to be selling live Christmas trees this year. You order that bad boy, they'll send you a 7-foot tree that was chopped down less than 10 days ago. It'll set you back $115, but it's pretty convenient. By the way, Amazon Prime members, shipping is free. Yeah, how am I going to get that thing through the door? About a month ago, 28-year-old woman in England, Charlotte Pert, told her husband, Daniel, hey, guess what? I just hit the lottery for over $300,000, or whatever that is in pounds. Then she laughed at him when she said, just kidding, just a joke. They like to pull pranks on each other a lot. This time he fell for it. Well, then early last week, she called him at work and said she'd won an even bigger jackpot. He was kind of sick of it at that point, passed the phone off to somebody else to let her screw with him. But then she sent him a screenshot. She had hit the lottery for £1 million. That is just under 1.3 mil. They claimed their prize last week, plan to use a large chunk of the money to buy a bigger house. And their 3 kids are pumped up because they finally get to have their own bedrooms. So, and this time, don't hang up. I'm not kidding. I really, really won a lottery. A lot of people have trouble getting to sleep. There are all kinds of systems. You know, you can visualize the sunset or the waves lapping up onto the beach. Or, you know, you can use medicinal aids. There was a story this week about a new drink called Psalm Sleep that supposedly knocks you out in 30 minutes. But if you don't have time for that, there's a quicker way. A book published in 1981 revealed a secret method the U.S. military supposedly came up with that can put you to sleep in 2 minutes. This is a military secret, though, so don't tell anybody. All right? Okay. Number one, relax your face, including your tongue, your jaw, and the muscles around your eyes. Relax. You're feeling sleepy, sleepy. Drop your shoulders as low as they can go, then relax your arms one at a time. Breathe out and relax your chest. Then relax your legs, starting with your thighs and then your calves, all the way down to your feet. And then picture yourself in a calm location. You're lying in a canoe under a clear blue sky. Or perhaps you're lying in a black velvet hammock in a dark room. And if you're still not asleep, repeat the phrase, don't think, over and over again in your head to quiet your mind, right? Might not work at first. The military found that when people did it for 6 weeks, it had a 96% success rate. So remember our advice. Don't think. All you have to do is, well, you can pretend you're a progressive. They don't think. No, just don't think. And the next thing you know, you're sound asleep. Try it. Let us know if it works for you. All right. If that doesn't work, you can buy some of the Psalm Sleep stuff. I'm sure it's on the web somewhere. Bobby, I think that's the most I've ever heard Moneypenny say on air. She says a lot more, not necessarily on air, but we converse in the studio. We'll work her in here more and more. Quarter before 7 here on the Bobby Mac Show. Take a quick break here, and then we're right back with the last few remaining minutes of the bonus hour here on the Monday, Can't Trust That Day edition. Remember, don't think. Don't think. Certainly a tragic situation with 19 lives lost in Hurricane Florence that hit North Carolina so hard over the weekend. But there are always some rays of sunshine in these stories like this one. This is from Megan Flynn at the Washington Post. There's nothing like a meal at the Waffle House after driving more than 60 animals from the South Carolina coast to southern Alabama inside of a school bus. Tony Alsup can attest to that. Alsup, a 51-year-old truck driver from Greenback, Tennessee, was parked at a Waffle House outside Fayetteville on Sunday night for a quick pit stop. He'd been on the road since Monday when he hopped in his bus and headed toward the coast, committed to rescuing as many animals as possible ahead of Hurricane Florence. Inside the bus, the seats had been ripped out to make room for its passengers. On the bus's side were the words, Emergency Animal Rescue Shelter, but it could have said Noah's Ark. In the last week, Alsup and his bus have rescued 53 dogs and 11 cats from South Carolina shelters that were in the path of Florence, as first reported by the Greenville News. And come morning, Alsup expects to search for more. I'm like, look, these are lives, too, Alsup told the Washington Post during his stop at the Waffle House. Animals, especially shelter pets, they always have to take the back seat of the bus, but I'll give them their own bus. If I have to, I'll pay for all the fuel or even a boat to get these dogs out of there. Alsup, who wants to open his own animal shelter one day, has been rescuing shelter pets from floodwaters with his school bus since Hurricane Harvey ravaged the Texas coast last year. You remember what it did, of course, to Houston. When Alsup saw on the news how numerous animal shelters became overcrowded with lost or rescued animals, he thought he could help. He wanted to help transport the animals to vacant shelters, but he knew he couldn't put them in a semi-trailer. I thought, well, what can I do? And then I thought, well, I'll just go buy a bus. He has since helped with rescues during Hurricanes Irma and Maria. No bus for the latter. He was feeding horses. And now during Florence, last Monday, when Alsop began his latest rescues, the kennels in his vehicle were stacked from ceiling to floor. Pet food, water bowls, leashes, and toys were strewn about the aisles. As he rolled along his route, Alsop kept telling his Facebook followers that he had room for more, asking them to point him to where pets needed help. No one left behind, he wrote in one Facebook post before signing off with his standard line, "Love y'all, mean it." In less than 48 hours, he stopped at the Humane Society of North Myrtle Beach, the Dillon County Animal Shelter, and another in Orangeburg, and St. Francis Animal Center in Georgetown, which sang his praises on social media Sunday. In a Facebook post late Sunday, the St. Francis Animal Center said that Alsop was rescuing all the leftover pets, the dogs and cats the shelter couldn't seem to hand off to anyone else. "It's all true. Tony swooped in at 4 a.m. Wednesday morning to pick up our leftovers, the dogs with blocky heads, the ones with heartworm, the ones no one else will ever take, and he got them to safety. Not the most conventional evacuation, but surely the one with the most heart." Once he had them in his bus, Alsop drove to Foley, Alabama, where his friend Angela Ebe Maddox opened her privately run dog shelter to the new arrivals for the night. She gave them baths and fluffy blankets and spa treatment. Alsop said they couldn't find enough shelters or foster homes for the animals. "They managed to do it in a matter of a day. We just burned up the airwaves," Alsop said. Some people came to adopt some of the dogs and cats on the spot, while Alsop coordinated with other animal shelters or volunteers to meet him in Knoxville, where he would hand off about 40 others. From there, Alsop said the remaining dogs and cats went off to vacant shelters across the country, and then after a short rest, he got back on the road Sunday and drove until he got to the Waffle House. Today, he was headed to Wilmington, North Carolina, if he can make it there. He said he's heard on the radio the roads are closed, that everything is flooded and nobody can get through, but he heard there was a shelter that needed him, he said, so he's going to try and get there. "What's happened to Woody is so upsetting." I'm sorry, that's the beginning of another story. So this is a great story out of this, and there was another one today, too. This is about April Casey in Kinston, North Carolina. She lives in Seven Springs, and she was trying to help a friend get some cats out of her house when she heard dogs whimpering and crying nearby. She ended up saving 18 dogs in Kinston, North Carolina. April Casey. Nice work. Nice work, folks. And you will be rewarded in the end. That's all for today. Thanks so much for being along. See you tomorrow. And in the meantime, have a great evening. And till tomorrow at 3, God bless.
That's all, folks.
Well, kids, that's our show for today. And now, in the words of Mr. Cole Porter,
every time we say goodbye,
goodbye.
You say goodbye, and I say hello.
Hello, I must be going. I must be going.
So long, farewell, our feet are saying goodbye. I leave and heave a sigh and say goodbye.
Goodbye to you. Goodbye to you.
I'll be back.
Broadcast day.
Goodbye.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.